T-minus 29. RMXT Studio Number 1, Manhattan, New York. Welcome back to Focus 2020, Marion de Klerk said, addressing the camera in a surprisingly sober tone. On behalf of the network, I would like to apologize for some of the language you may have heard during our first segment, and personally, I would like to appeal to our panelists to bear in mind their responsibilities to viewers of all ages. With that said, we move on to the highly controversial topic of elder revival. The camera focused in on Jan Geller, who looked like Marion had just personally offended her. It feels like a long time ago since Dan McCarthy and Tara Ford returned from New Kerguelen to report their findings. If we can believe them, Jan groaned. Marion de Klerk stared disapprovingly in Jan's direction. If you interrupt me again, your microphone will be cut, she said. Although discussion during the first segment had at times appeared chaotic and perhaps even pantomime-like when Clark and later Jan rose to their feet, Marion had never truly lost control. At no point had a request been ignored and at no point had an order been necessary, but her readiness to authoritatively strike down Jan's obstinacy was indicative of the way Marion de Klerk had run the show for not only years, but decades. Its longevity, as well as her own, owed a lot to her successful approach of letting things flow organically as much as possible, but nipping disrespect in the bud whenever it reared its head. Egotistical politicians, athletes, and movie stars had all been kept in check by the dispassionate moderator, but an attitude like Jan Geller's tonight had rarely been seen. After leaving several seconds for Jan to either respond or not, a test of whether she had gotten the message, Marion continued. As I was saying, Dan and Tara reported, of course, that the messenger's so-called elders were in fact two large computer-like machines. The breakdown of those machines left the messengers without access to the on-tap knowledge they had become dependent on. The elders, apparently created by the forefathers of the messengers we're familiar with, have been spoken of as the ultimate repository of universal knowledge and as artificially intelligent computers far beyond anything humanity has previously been able to conceive of. The elders served as a complete and interactive encyclopedia, if you will, and one the messengers used to reference before every major decision. They initially spoke to Dan as though the elders had died rather than ceased to function, implying that the messengers' one-way bond with the elders and their reliance upon them had grown so strong over the course of thousands of years and untold generations that the messengers' race actually lost the distinction between alive and inanimate. They have spoken of reviving their elders, while others have termed this as rebooting the machines. Whichever terminology we apply, the stakes are high. I promised before the break that I would hand back to Timo first. So please, Mr. Fiore, your thoughts.
It's delicate, Timo admitted. More than any other aspect of cooperation, this is delicate. We have to bear in mind that the messengers didn't know how to repair their own shelter without access to the knowledge their forefathers trusted to the elders. All the metaphors are familiar by now. A library lost to fire, with the wisdom within gone forever. A modern individual trusting their memory to a smartphone and internet connection which one day stops working. This is the situation the messengers face, in essence, and it's one we're going to have to deal with, one way or the other. Emma nodded on the screen behind Timo. Far more than she'd expected to at the outset, she felt very glad he was there. You see, he continued, gesturing frequently and expressively with his hands, as he so often did. If the messengers don't know how to do things we know how to do, repair a physical shelter, for instance, I find it tremendously unlikely that they will ever be able to articulate the functioning of their spacecraft, from the cloaking mechanisms to the propulsion system. They are aware of the interstellar shortcut of sorts between Earth and New Kerguelen, which we know because they've said as much to Dan, but we don't know what form that takes, let alone how it works, much less if and how it could be replicated. One of my goals at Fiore Frontieri, without wishing to jump ahead, is to work with the messengers to at least develop a craft similar to their own, which we can use to traverse this interstellar shortcut on our own steam. It's wonderful that the messengers have welcomed a human repair crew to New Kerguelen, but it would be even more wonderful if the crew had been able to stock and pilot its own craft rather than rely on the messengers.
And you think that's possible? Marion asked. Or, I should say, viable. You think developing a spacecraft capable of making it through this so-called interstellar shortcut and reaching New Kerguelen is viable? In our lifetime, let's say?
Timo nodded. I would liken it to crossing an ocean. You don't have to know how or indeed why the waves work as they do, so long as you have a seaworthy vehicle to mimic and replicate. We need to know what kind of stresses the craft would be subjected to, but I see no obvious reason why we can't do it. After all, the entire journey takes minutes. It really is as though the shortcut is an interstellar tunnel of some kind, with one entrance at the edge of our atmosphere and one at the edge of New Kerguelen's. That excites me more than anything else, because the mere theoretical confirmation that such a thing is possible would spur us to explore. But the fact that one exists and that its owners are willing to let us utilize it now and will be willing to let us fully study it when we get our collective act together, well, I don't know what could excite me more than that. Clark, too, nodded approvingly at Timo's response, admiring how easily and naturally he applied the tactic of ending his answer to a controversial question by pivoting to something that was still relevant, but certainly less touchy. Billy? Marion prodded. Marion, he replied. She almost grinned, caught out by his response, but managed to retain her usual detached expression. Should we revive the elders? At the earliest opportunity, Billy said. The messengers are our friends, and if we can help them to revive their elders, the potential benefits of the ancient knowledge we would immediately gain access to are almost literally unimaginable. Timo just mentioned the interstellar shortcut, and sure, I'd like to know how it works, but do you know what I'd like to know even more? How to make another one. Space exploration would transform overnight if we gained access to that knowledge, and I see no reason why we won't just as soon as the elders are back up and running. You don't worry about the risks? Joe Crabb asked, rejoining the conversation. Marion de Klerk was delighted by this, as cordial back and forth discussion between panelists was always preferable to an oscillation between bouts of shouting and repeated questions from her. Of which part? Billy asked. Do you mean in the same way Jan is worried about humans gaining uplift powers? We should be worried about how the knowledge we learn is applied by the governments who will try to be in control of it? Because I really think Dan is our safety guard on that front. The messengers will always go through him before they go to our political leaders. Crabb tilted his head in a manner that suggested he broadly agreed. Granted, on that I can see your point, but my concerns are more strategic, you might say. Clark, I'll be interested in your take on this too as a military man, because my concern is about the elders themselves. I think we can safely assume that there is artificial intelligence at play, rather than static reference material based on what the messengers told Dan about their eventual decision to divert Il Diavolo. If we cast our minds back to what they said, as reported by Dan, who I fully accept gains nothing from lying, we'll remember that they spoke of needing permission from the elders. Billy nodded, actually catching himself enjoying a discussion with a man who used to carry himself far less politely than he did now. Back then, Crabb said, gesturing with his left hand as he grew into the conversation after a long while on the sidelines, Dan and the rest of us thought the elders were, well, elders, as we would think of them. We didn't know the messengers lacked our universal distinction between man and machine because we didn't know how much they'd come to rely on the information they got from their superintelligent and presumably artificially intelligent machines. But those machines said no. Those machines didn't want to save us until Dan made the case in a way that got through once the messengers relayed it. Going back even further, it was the elders who authorized or perhaps even suggested the attack on DS-1, which almost everyone has forgotten about. But I haven't. I haven't forgotten that humanity's first encounter with the messengers came as a result of that intervention, when they acted to block our attempt to launch a defensive space station which would ultimately have been stocked with nuclear warheads. They told this to Dan utterly explicitly. And in the strategic context I alluded to, I worry that reactivating or reviving any kind of decision makers who don't want us to be able to protect ourselves may not be the smartest thing we ever do. Billy glanced at Clark, gladly deferring on this one. By all means, what you say has merit, Clark said. Personally, I just weigh it against everything else. We face all kinds of threats, Joe. Without getting into the environmental stuff, let's even just think about another comet. They stopped the last one before the elders agreed, eventually, but what if there's another one? You saw how messed up things got last time, and we couldn't unite behind any useful action plan. The same messengers who can't fix their own roof without the elders' help, no offense to them, probably wouldn't be able to deflect a comet either. So I just think in terms of weighing the risks.
Also, Emma spoke up. There are two more reasons not to worry about that, Joe. First, okay, the elders didn't want us to have nuclear weapons in space, but I don't think it's reasonable to conclude that they based that decision on wanting to retain some kind of military superiority. If this was a fight, which it's not, we're the ants and they're the magnifying glass. I don't say that to scare anyone. As someone who knows the messengers through direct contact, and as a mother raising a young child in this world, I'm not scared of the messengers or their elders in the slightest. Because think of it in a strictly logical sense. They saved us, and why would they do that if they saw us as any kind of threat or competition?
Without quite nodding in concession, Joe raised his eyebrows in a way that indicated he was starting to see Emma's point.
And beyond that, she continued, there's another element to all of this, and that's the messengers themselves. You make important points, Joe, but the key thing to remember is that the elders are machines. They can't stop comets, fight wars, or anything else. They provided information and apparently subjective advice to the messengers, but the messengers are the ones who had to act on it. They always did, as we know from what they've told us, but that doesn't mean they always will. Dan has spoken to Leisha about this, and Leisha has relayed the feeling on New Kerguelen, where Dan and Tara are held up as borderline gods for securing peace on both worlds during their last visit. The messengers were awed by our industrious resourcefulness in being willing and able to provide help with their shelter, almost as much as they were humbled by our generosity in offering it. In Dan's words, supported by Tara and based on the direct conversations they've had with the messengers, they have us on a pedestal. In all honesty, right now, I think we care more about reviving their elders than they do.
This, a new revelation in the public sphere, brought surprised looks on the faces of Timo and Billy, as well as Joe Crabb. Jan Geller, apparently having either tuned out of this relatively intellectual and unemotional discussion or having exhausted her outrage muscles in the first segment, was more or less expressionless.
Almost done, Emma said, correctly sensing Marion de Klerk's willingness to interrupt too much unbroken speech from one panelist. But the last thing I want to say is that if we do revive them, even in the worst-case Hollywood nightmare scenario that Pandora's box turns against us and the machines we reactivate tell their keepers to eliminate us, and I'm trying to keep a straight face here, even if that were to happen, the messengers trust the people who stepped in to fix their shelter more than the machines that suddenly stopped working. And don't forget, they now understand the man versus machine distinction. They now know that the elders contained knowledge without truly possessing it, that their circuitry or whatever the quantum or alien equivalent might be did contain knowledge, but could never hold true wisdom. It's a complicated matter, but if you can believe it, that's the short version of why we have nothing to worry about. I also agree with Timo and Billy that we should pursue elder revival as an absolute priority because it holds the keys to wonderful doors leading to wonderful places we haven't even imagined yet.
And I'll just say one more thing too, Clark said. Dan and Tara's word is solid gold gospel. When we talk about them, we're talking about my brother and we're talking about my girlfriend, two people I trust more than anyone else in this world. Well, level with Emma and my dad, I guess I should say, since I know they're both watching. He turned to the screen, relaying Emma's feed, and waved, with the laughter on both sides bringing a welcome moment of levity. Like a shark smelling blood, Jan Geller pounced into action.
It's all so nice and cozy, she said, mocking a grin. Both of them play this sickly sweet family card all the time, but I mention the baby's name and it's Blue Murder. But I know what you are.
You're liars. You lied about the hoax for a year after you found out because you were scared of the personal consequences. You covered up Il Diavolo with Timo's help on that one because you didn't think the world deserved to know. So tell me, oh holy ones, oh pedestal deities from Birchwood on high, what's the next big lie? What are you all covering up now? Does Dan still have the power? Do you all have it? Are you listening to my thoughts now? And whoever else's you decide you want to hear?
Come on, Jan, Marion sighed, glancing at the time on her desk's inbuilt screen and deciding the best way to respond beyond that was not at all.
To wrap up, I'd like to pass over to you, Billy, for a word on the rumors that you were recently questioned by Turkish police about a discovery at one of your dig sites. Dortlu Tepe, I believe, is the local name.
That is the name of one of our sites, Billy said, feigning indifference. Timo has been very helpful with the funding and the initial provision of scouting equipment, as I'm sure you can imagine, but our local teams on the ground are the real heroes. We're hopeful they're going to dig up some archaeological wonders before long, because the real history of our species is yet to be told.
Timo and Billy both smiled, thinking this would be enough to settle De Klerk's interest in a subject that was less likely to hold the public's attention than what had gone before, given that no one yet knew what had been found. On the other hand, both knew that if the carving of the non-messenger alien with the all-too-familiar contact cable was public knowledge, this topic would have headlined the show.
But you're on record quite recently stating that you're looking for evidence of ancient alien visitation, Billy,
Marion probed.
Aren't you? So, for the benefit of viewers who might not be intimately familiar with your current theories, can you tell us what exactly that entails? Do you think the messengers have visited Earth and been detected by early humans far longer than they admitted to Dan? Perhaps, I don't know, that their knowledge of those visits has been lost with their elders?
Billy shook his head. The elders were fully functioning when Dan first met the messengers. They told him loud and clear that they had visited Earth's atmosphere for science, as he heard their explanation at the time, which was before the communicational dexterity improved with their increased understanding of human thought patterns. They also said they had never encountered humans, so no, that's not what I think. What I've always uncontroversially maintained is that the existence of one intelligent species in our universe, to me, logically implies the likely presence of another. The messengers proved that. And I think their existence makes it even more likely that there's something else out there, too. Call me an optimist, but wherever there's two, there's usually three.
A fair thesis, Marion said, reading some notes from her discreet screen. But the messengers also told Dan that we are the first other civilizational race they have ever discovered. I believe that was the term, but it was certainly something to that effect. Does that mean you think another race has visited Earth without the messengers knowing, even though they have this interstellar shortcut between their planet and ours, and have been doing science here for a considerable time?
Emma and Timo, knowing all about the find at Dortlu Tepe, sat uneasily while Billy paused for thought before fielding this question.
Civilizational and particularly galactic timescales are difficult for us to get our heads around, he eventually replied. Another race could predate the messengers by a billion years, for all we know. Likewise, two races could have independently discovered and visited Earth within the relative blink of an eye. A third race could have been here just before the messengers' forefathers developed the shortcut. At this stage, it really is all conjecture.
At this stage, I suppose it is, De Klerk said. And as we're almost out of time, Billy, I'll ask this point blank. Have you found something big in Turkey related to all of this?
I've made a career out of finding big things, Marion, Billy smiled. And if I didn't think they were hiding in Turkey, we both know I wouldn't be looking.
Marion De Klerk grinned slightly, rueing the clock, but satisfied that Billy had at least ended with a solid line.
That brings things to a close here in New York, she said. And I'd like to thank our guests for a great discussion. I'll see you next week for another exciting edition of Focus 2020. Whatever happens on this planet, or any other between now and then.
What was intended as a nice closing line carried more weight than Marion De Klerk realized, because by the time next Sunday rolled around, life on both Earth and New Kerguelen would have changed forever.